Happy Tuesday, and welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and today we're doing things a little differently. We aren't taking phone calls in the studio, but I am going to bring to you a conversation that I had on the road this summer in Thatcher, Idaho. My husband and I did a long 7-state tour around the western part of the country earlier this summer. I only had a couple of places that I really wanted to make sure that we saw, and then everything else was kind of a surprise along the way. And one of the places that I wanted to see was called Maple Grove Hot Springs. And I found Maple Grove Hot Springs because I was flipping through Sunset Magazine, and there's a little tiny article about this magical spot in the southern part of Idaho. And there's a river that runs through a canyon and then natural hot springs that come out of the side of this mountain and dump into the river. And for generations, there have been these natural hot springs, and people have carved out big round pools and would come down and soak in the tubs overlooking the river. And I love hot springs and I love rivers, and I thought it couldn't be a more perfect setup for a place for us to visit. And they have camping, and this hot springs was under new ownership, and they were just announcing their grand reopening right before we got there. So we were one of the first new guests that had come in for this refurbished or rehabbed hot springs. So I really didn't know what we were getting into just from this little tiny blurb in Sunset Magazine, but we set out towards southern Idaho. Thatcher, Idaho is about an hour north of Logan, Utah, actually, and it's not too far from the Tetons. And it's also not too far from Pocatello, Idaho, if you're trying to get a picture of where it is. But what surprised me about this area is I didn't expect it to be as lush and green and bountiful as it was. I can't think of another word. Bountiful always comes to my mind when I picture this area, because it's long rolling hills with rivers meandering through it and farms and just incredible vistas that go on forever. And it was a perfect time to visit the area right in the early part of the summer, because everything was just full of life. So we arrived at Maple Grove Hot Springs, and it definitely was in the early stages of a soft opening. A lot of things were still under construction, but they had in place some yurts and canvas tents that were aligned along the river. Pretty views. We got a tent site with our tent set up, and we had a view out over the river, and it was nice. And I hadn't really planned to, you know, have any direct conversations with anyone there. We were just strictly tourists at this point. But just as we were setting up, one of the owners came by to see how we were doing, introduced himself, and we immediately hit it off. And I asked him a little bit about the history of the place and what they were hoping would happen and what their goals were. And he was such a great conversationalist and was so open and so excited and enthusiastic about what they were creating here at Maple Grove Hot Springs. I said, "Do you mind sitting down and talking to me about, you know, who you are and what your vision is?" And he said, "No, absolutely. I'd love to do that." So great. So we met a little later outside of this big yurt that they had put up for conferences and yoga, corporate retreats, and family gatherings. And so we sat outside and just started talking about what had inspired him to get involved with Maple Grove Hot Springs. And the great part of conversation is you quite often have no idea where it's going to go. And here was someone who was really open and willing to talk about the events in his life that had led him to changing drastically the course of his expected future and how he ended up being one of the owners and general manager of this property. And so what I thought was going to be a quick conversation about Maple Grove Hot Springs and this venture that he was setting out on to create kind of a resort-like niche camping, resting experience became a conversation about finding our truth and mental health and finding the courage to step away from the expected path to take care of yourself and to create a life that feels healthy and good and grounding, even though it's not what everyone thinks you should be doing. I enjoyed my time with Jordan Menzel, and I'm looking forward to getting your thoughts about this conversation. And as I said, although we're not taking calls today in the studio, I always welcome your feedback to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also find me on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. You can leave messages there. Or follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast our shows by visiting any way that you find podcasts. Apple Podcasts works. And search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and our shows will be uploaded so you can listen at your convenience. And if you have an extra minute to write a review, that also helps to get the podcast out to other people. So here it is, a show from the road, Thatcher, Idaho. My guest is Jordan Menzel. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Start just giving me the history of Maple Grove Hot Springs.
Yeah. So far as I know, at Maple Grove Hot Springs, which is the source right over here, has been enjoyed by humans for centuries and centuries, going back to the Shoshone and beyond. This was traditionally a winter space for nomadic tribes and housing. All along the Bear River is a really geothermally active corridor of hot springs. And so it's been here for a long time. It's rumored and kind of known to have passed through lots of hands as early as the 70s. People have told me that their grandparents came here into fashioned hot pools, you know, in the 40s and 50s. So there's anecdotes of people utilizing it for a long time.
Was it always just public space then at that point?
It typically privately owned, but pretty loosely, whether through ranching, and so kind of unstructured in how people used it. And then I think in the early 90s started to be commercially developed with a few pools that were really refined in the early 2000s, so not very long ago.
How did people access, because you can't go to the source, it's 120 degrees.
Right.
So how did people...
So always with, the source is churning out a lot of water at any given point. And you'll see that there's a runoff creek that runs down through the amphitheater there and water falls into the reservoir. And then that is now piped, you know, for about 100 yards to the pools here and goes through a pretty rudimentary cooling system, so far as I can tell, that makes its way into the pools. It comes out around 160 to 170. In this pond down here, it starts to be cooling off around 140. And by the time it makes it into the pools and those pools fill up, right now those are ranging between 98 to 105, which is a really great temperature. So there's a lot of water that's churning out. And it, it's been developed in a hodgepodge fashion for probably 30 years by different owners, and the story of most owners has been one that I've even related to in this very short period of time, which is this land requires a lot. You've got right now 45 acres with freshwater requirements, irrigation water demands, a lot of mineral hot water that wants to deteriorate, consume, and clog everything it touches.
Really?
And so it requires a lot of maintenance and cleaning and understanding. That mineral water pressure is directly related to the volume of the reservoir. So when it ebbs and flows, so does the pressure, which means we're constantly having to adapt flow rates to keep the pools there. So And it's a fully off-grid property and always has been. And so most owners, you know, it's all hands on deck. And they've typically lived here and put blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of resources into just the maintenance of the space, which observationally has taken a real toll
on the individuals.
On individuals, on the land, because at the end of the day, that is humans versus a dynamic force of nature here. Mm-hmm. And that's always going to take its toll.
So do you think that over the course of the last 30, 40 years, there was a lot of well-intentioned owners who just couldn't keep up?
Yeah, and in many ways they kept up great. But ultimately, I think everyone finds that there's a lot of balance here on this property, but that balance can swing way too far if you don't have the right resources and energy and probably rebooting. And so far as I can tell, much of that balance turned into a form of almost feeling like a prisoner of the land. Mm. Particularly once you start to welcome guests or overnight guests and you're running a lean operation. And a lot of this is before the era of internet businesses or scheduling. And so you're hanging tight, waiting for maybe a customer or two or 30 to show up, which means you're rarely leaving the site. And so it really took a toll. And so many of the owners of the past have experienced a real financial scarcity, struggled to find a business model around hot springs day use, and either lost the property or really had it fall, like what happened most recently, into a state of deterioration that it was no longer operable.
Okay.
And been kind of chosen to sell rather than reinvest that capital back into it.
They just wanted out.
Yeah.
So how did you then come to be part of the land? What's your history in this area?
In many ways, I feel like a really lucky and appreciative newcomer. Mm. And so I don't take that lightly, because this place has a customer culture. Even today, there are guests who've been coming here for over a decade, while most people are here for their first time. And so those who've come here for a long time have a deep love for it and have really bonded with it over sometimes generations.
What was the attraction? Was it always the mineral springs?
Yeah.
Okay. So what is it about? I'm going to backtrack a little
bit. No problem.
What is it about the mineral springs here? Because, you know, we're familiar with hot springs and the potential healing power, but what makes these mineral springs unique?
So one of the things that I find entertaining and I'm really excited to solve is, to my knowledge, very few of the owners have actually ever tested the minerals in the water.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Which is maybe a representation of that scarcity. It's a high cost and it's not top of mind. They're always hot. They're always enjoyable. They don't smell. That's good enough. We do know that they're primarily lithium hot springs, which are naturally said to have great effects on stress, anxiety, tension, etc. And so the hot springs are a really big reason why people come here, but my experience personally and in talking with so many of the guests is they don't necessarily come here because the water here is distinct to maybe lava hot springs or crystal hot springs, but they come here because this is one of the few places that happens to be sitting on largely untouched 45-acre property along the Bear River and the Oneida Narrows Reservoir, surrounded by thousands of untouched ranching and Bureau of Land Management acreage. And so you get to enjoy everything that we love about hot springs without the crowds and with a very dynamic wildlife and ecosystem that is changing every season. That means we have golden eagle, bald eagle, sandhill crane, pelican, thousands of swan, all of those cycling through with each season. We have deer, moose, elk, mountain lion,
bears.
Coyote. There are bears. They're infrequent. We have turkeys, pheasants, and lots of great fish. And it's not uncommon to sit in the pools and watch a pair of bald eagles fighting over a fresh catch from the reservoir. early in the morning or late in the evening. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to enjoy hot springs nearly in their natural setting without needing to hike a long distance and without being overwhelmed mm-hmm. by tour buses or crowds or noise or distraction is one of the reasons why people love Maple Grove. So in part, the challenge is they love it because it's empty.
Okay.
But it being empty makes it a real struggling business. And so our challenge is how do we get more people to enjoy this place in a way that's actually less distracting than it ever was before?
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Jordan Menzel. He is the general manager and founding partner of Maple Grove Hot Springs in Thatcher, Idaho. And we're sitting together along the Bear River and overlooking the source of the hot springs. And what I find so fascinating, Jordan, is that there's this beautiful river and then the hot springs, you're sitting in the hot spring looking at the river. How many places are there like that in this area? I mean, it's got to be unique unto itself.
It is. This river has a lot of geothermal activity, but most individuals are only able to enjoy that in really commercially developed spaces, which are amazing. And they're great for families. They're great for friends. But it's an environment that's going to include a lot of crowds, a lot of big pool infrastructure and water slides. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always appeal to people who want to enjoy hot springs in a natural setting, but who also might not be able to hike to some of the more remote destinations that have those ingredients, because this is not the only place, but it is unique in that regard.
So then bring me to the point where you and your partners decided this is something we want to do.
Yeah.
Because you didn't grow up here.
I didn't. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know how, you know, far back in the most immediate term.
I like to go anywhere.
Yeah. So I'll give you my, the abridged version of how I ended up here.
Okay. And then maybe we'll go back and tap
yep.
in. Okay.
And because they're directly connected. So I, just to make it clear what an odd fit this is, I have a graduate degree in development economics from Georgetown University, where I taught. I've worked in the software industry right after graduate school with a startup of mine in the civic tech sector.
Okay.
And ended up developing for 3 years a venture-backed company that aimed to create an audience-moderated online town hall software for elected officials. Ultimately had great traction, but not a real viable product market fit. So after 3 years, you know, successfully ran an unsuccessful company, right? And it was an amazing learning experience. It was the time of my life. And I really learned that I did enjoy, well, my background professionally or academically was in foreign affairs, national security, and international development, that I really enjoyed a more eclectic work environment. And so from that, I went to work almost at that same pace, which was, you know, long days mm-hmm. and long weekends, but a really rewarding work environment. I rolled that over. I said, well, I've been in this software space.
Were you a professor at Georgetown
same time? I was an assistant, a teaching assistant to mm-hmm. former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright.
Oh, my gosh.
And so a very fun role for a nerdy policy wonk from Utah.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because you are from
Salt Lake City.
Right.
So I went out to D.C. for school and work and found that wonderful job and fellowship towards my last year and had the time of my life and started my company right out of that. And so I actually, after this world of foreign policy, didn't get a dive in much professionally. I ended up working in the civic tech software space. And concurrently, while I was having the time of my life professionally, I was married and we were expecting our first child. And ultimately we separated and divorced over those years, in those startup years. So those startup years were full of very rewarding work, but also an immense toll on my personal life. Moving from DC back to Salt Lake City, balancing a separation amidst having a child. And so many highs and lows. And surprisingly in that environment, my mental and emotional health was doing okay, I thought.
Yeah, because you were getting up and doing work every day.
We were functioning. Yes. But it was really an overwhelming time of a collapse in many ways. We ultimately made the hard decision to close down our business. Navigated the process of divorce amongst a one-year-old. And all the while being financially responsible for kind of two emerging homes. And so what I did in that space is I was so weighted down by the pressure of failure and the implications of that. And all this knowledge I'd accrued, but also the sheer responsibility of navigating kind of two homes in a state I didn't think I'd come back to.
Right, because you found yourself back in your home.
Yeah, and I thought, oh.
Once you've been in D.C., right?
Yeah, and all it's a very intoxicating intellectual environment.
Yeah.
And, but there I was. And so, and I was really committed to be there. And in that space, I turned to the most practical, logical, resume building opportunity, which was an opportunity of a lifetime, to join another big growing software company in Utah. And it was an amazing opportunity. It's a company called Qualtrics. And I felt very fortunate to join the team at the stage I did.
How old were you at this time?
Probably,
it seems like these are happening
probably
fast.
30.
Okay, so it's all happening very
pretty
quickly.
Fast. Graduation, startup.
Amazing job.
Oh boy, startups. Not going to make it, but startups, that's okay. We raised under $1 million. We had a team. We tried everything we could. Our investors
had a great idea.
Confident in our approach, and everyone said there's not a product market fit, but we gave it our all. And so now what?
Yep.
We take those lessons and we do something else. And so I dove into a wonderful high-paced startup. At the time, in order to financially sustained two homes.
Mm-hmm.
I got creative and I started to experiment and I restored an old 1976 Airstream. And a side thing, if you Google Jordan Menzel Airstream, you'll watch a video that actually highlights me and my daughter living in that.
Oh, really?
And the mental health implications from a positive perspective of I downsized dramatically. And I moved into a 180 square foot Airstream trailer in downtown.
You're like the original tiny home person.
Kind of before tiny homes were seen as something cool.
Yes.
Everyone, and sometimes myself included, thought, oh, he's falling apart completely.
Right. He's lost his mind. Now he's in the trailer down by the river.
And he's literally on my 30th birthday, I threw a birthday party in my friend's backyard in front of my trailer. And I thought, you know, when you're like 15, your parents go, you know, if you don't go to college and they paint this picture, when you're 30, you're going to be living in a trailer
in the backyard
with a barrel that has a fire in it.
Yes.
And that was exactly what was happening. And so it was not lost on me that this was shaky territory if I wasn't comfortable, but I was.
So it's almost as if you were moving towards this direction.
Yeah, I just didn't know.
You just didn't know where it was taking you.
No idea.
Right?
So I did that, and I did not join the tiny home movement because many folks have this like long crafted plan. They've been observing it. They've been Pinteresting boards, and honey, we're doing it, and here it is. Mine was I bought this trailer on a real whim, on a bike ride, over a weekend, and so I remodeled it, found a great space in my friend's backyard. And spent the next 3 years there with my daughter, who was two at the time, and living with me part-time. And I moved from one spot to another, as you sometimes have to do, and was totally introduced to something that was always maybe speaking to me, but I didn't quite identify with it. I certainly never deliberately did it, which was minimalism.
Okay.
Just by necessity, you move into a space like that. You have to downsize quite a bit. And I really experienced the mental benefits of removing clutter, eliminating financial stress, and it was a really happy time. And ultimately, that trailer, that allowed me to afford a home that was a duplex that could have a rental, and I kept renting that trailer in the backyard. that allowed me to really save up a bit. And I sold that trailer, and the resources from that trailer are what allowed me to do this.
Oh, really?
But during that time, I made some pretty, I crashed pretty hard, unrelated to living in a trailer.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is Jordan Menzel, general manager and partner in the Maple Grove Hot Springs along the Bear River in Thatcher, Idaho. And Jordan and I started off just talking about his vision for Maple Grove Hot Springs, but we soon wandered off and started talking about how Jordan needed to find Maple Grove Hot Springs to help bring a balance to his life. And so we continue our conversation along the Bear River in Thatcher, Idaho. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
When it's not always raining, there'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining, there'll be days like this. Everything falls into place.
When I stepped in while I was living in a trailer, I got that job at a big software company.
The
catch was I had to commute down to Provo, Utah, which is about an hour each way. And I was experiencing a dramatic loss in time with my daughter just by working no longer for myself. And I was working in a very fun, dynamic environment that was really rewarding, but at the same time, I was experiencing for the first time, even after divorce, even after living in a trailer, even after being financially scarce, it wasn't until I was making a lot of money and relatively secure that I started experiencing like, oh, I think this is what people talk about when they talk about anxiety. I'm afraid to get up in the morning. I can't wait to go to bed at night.
Yeah. You dread the next day.
I dread the next day. I show up to work and I'm paralyzed. And it's a dynamic environment. And now my strengths are no longer yielding what they used to. And in fact, I'm buckling under my own early signs of depression. And with each commute, I would become more depressed. And with each new work challenge, instead of it being rewarding, it was more and more paralyzing. And while I was succeeding in certain regards in the short term, as you try and do at a new role in a new company, my long-term stamina was so invisible to me. I was no longer imaginative about what I could even do. I would never say I became occupied with suicidal thoughts, but I did become uniquely uncreative about my future. Mm. I was trying really hard and I was feeling snippets of it, and routine and tradition were helping a lot. But I was seeing friends less. I was working out less. I was seeing my daughter less. All the things that I kind of knew kept me balanced. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't like surprised. I could see all the writing on the wall, but I couldn't see any way to change the variables. The workload wouldn't shift much. I did feel comfortable to talk to team members and managers, and everyone was, you know, overwhelmingly understanding, which made me kind of appreciate that, oh, you're understanding because you're probably experiencing elements
exactly.
of this. And so this is very common, and I didn't feel uncomfortable to talk about it. I made the decision to leave my employment, because I thought the primary variable here is commuting, are all these tangible things. And before I try and seek some medical support, I want to try and see if I can eliminate the things that I'm aware of. And I ultimately chose to concurrently do both.
Okay.
Because I was at a pretty low spot where I was like, you know, even stabilizing... but I was clear that I needed some help,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to still excel as a father and to not compound my situation even more by having some type of collapse. And so I kind of hit a wall, actually, right around a birthday of mine. And I don't even recall which one it was. But it really crashed, and I made a decision.
Was this before you'd left the job? Or you
I was still doing still at the
so
job.
You're still doing the grind.
Yeah, I remember the day I came into work, and my peer and coworker, a dear friend of mine, looked over at me, and I just started to cry into the computer. And he just said, well, let's go to lunch. And we did. And I laid out that I needed help and that I don't envision a work-life balance for my personality type that can navigate through what the role of the company required at that time, which was really me saying, I don't think I'm a 9-to-5 person. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can make the trade-offs given the fact that I'm a single parent for my time and my time with my daughter. I don't think I can afford to give up 2 hours a day to commuting in a car. I think those are things that are pushing me over my limit. And I've sustained a lot of low moments. And these seem like ones I can control, but I have no idea how I'm going to afford this. I have no idea what awaits, certainly. If not this job, then what?
And it was also, I would imagine, in some ways another, I can't leave or fail at another thing.
It was completely another failure in my view, right?
From that perspective.
I was, well, and what I love, so I left with all the support of amazing team members and dear friends. They understood. And so no one was surprised that something else might call to me that was a little less structured. Mm-hmm. And so that happened, and I learned that it was a beautiful thing to talk to everyone I was afraid to talk to, including my ex-wife. I had to fill her in, which is always a tough thing to do as you're co-parenting and you're trying to maintain a front that you've got it.
Yeah, because you don't want anyone
you
to
don't
start
want
doubting
anyone
you,
to
right?
question you.
Right.
And the tipping point, though, was as I was getting ready to have these crucial conversations with my work team and almost unable to function at work anymore, a friend over the weekend, unbeknownst to him, invited me, said, hey, I know you're the type of person that if you could be available, you would. I have a spot on a 21-day trip for the Grand Canyon private rafting, and it's in September, and I know you just got this great job. What do you think? And so that felt like the right medicine at the right time. And I seized on all of that together, and I quit with any plan. And for a moment, marinated in the fact that I've now failed twice. And I have no idea where I fit now, but the requirements are even higher. But it was a decision to say, but I know where I don't fit. Mm-hmm. And that's
huge.
That's huge. I tried what would be the conventional alternative, and I know that's not for me. And maybe I jumped in too quick or who knows what, but it was clear that was not the right fit for me. And I went on the rafting trip and had the time of my life.
I bet.
And the day I got back, I got an email from an international development organization that I had worked a lot with in the past that was Salt Lake City based. They were recruiting for the director of their international expedition program, which helps companies and individuals who are supporting international development infrastructure projects all over the world in 7 countries. It helps their donors head out to the field to go through an educational and experiential expedition and seminar to learn about how effective community development takes place. So there's a teaching role, there's a traveling role, there is, it's not a conventional job. And it's in a field that I really was passionate about and had kind of stepped out of for a bit. And so I found a quick home in the most rewarding employment I could have imagined, in a role that I'd actually been an expedition leader for them years in the past. And so it was easy initially because it was familiar. Mm-hmm. And so it was the softest landing And it was a blank canvas, much like a startup organization. It's a lean nonprofit. And so,
which you love the excitement.
Which I love. And, yeah. and they were welcoming of someone who had spent some time outside of the state in the field and also in the private sector. And so there was just a lot of needs as well. And so it was a really rewarding time. And I dug in and I told myself, I have to learn to thrive and commit for 3 years.
Okay.
2 to 3 years.
Okay.
I can't tank this. Because you start, when you deal with mental health issues, you start to question your ability to do what you've always done. You almost forget. And I questioned, am I unable to see something? Am I unable to function?
Right.
Have I lost?
In the traditional way,
right?
Support a family, get up and go to work. Take care of myself.
What unfolded was just under three amazing years in a couple different roles. It's called Choice Humanitarian, leading over 500 people, over 20 different trips across 7 countries, and having both the time of my life, but really learning my strengths, my weaknesses, and also experiencing wonderfully impactful growth in the organization. You know, we went from sending 200 donors and partners abroad to under 1,000. And that's where I learned that, interesting, when people and groups get out of their comfort zone, there's magical growth that happens. And I really enjoy facilitating that. I love to teach, and I love to also help support individuals in this context who are going abroad, oftentimes for their first time, into cultures and communities that make them very uncomfortable, with perspectives and paradigms that are often very ethnocentric, to experience what true equal exchange of information is across cultures, within cultures, and to come back a little bit more aware, a little bit more tuned in about their roles and responsibilities as global citizens. And that was fascinating. And detachment.
Mm-hmm.
Getting off of cell phones, getting off of internet, getting off of social media. All things that I did heavily after I crashed to my benefit.
You got off of all those things, right?
Yeah, really. Not that I was very active to begin with. I've always been a skeptical, naysaying last mover.
But interestingly, in the software field and in
totally.
The, yeah, in the interconnectedness
and
field
and ultimately works. In there was a real clash of values.
Mm-hmm.
And I admit that while I loved the startup environment of solving new problems, ultimately these are not the types of problems I was interested to spend my time on Earth solving.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is Jordan Menzel, General Manager and Partner of Maple Grove Hot Springs. And we continue our conversation along the Bear River in Thatcher, Idaho.
I was at an HR conference in Tampa,
okay.
Working for the software company. And nothing against HR professionals, but I was there. And I was standing in the back of this convention space and realized, like, you know, I am on this floating orb that has this fascinating geological biochemical combination that sustains this self-aware being called a human. And we are here for a finite period of time that is unknown to any one of us. And I'm having a panic attack that I'm spending my waking hours at this conference in Tampa. And I almost couldn't turn that awareness off. It was existential in nature. And so
It's the crashing of enlightenment or awareness.
You know, and so, but then the solution of what do you do with that in a modern society is almost more overwhelming. But I learned something about myself. I said, you know, about every 2 to 3 years, I am a creature of open-ended possibilities. I'm just going to tell this organization I love that I need 3 to 6 months off with not a firm commitment to come back, but a likely one. But I'm going to consider anything else. And if they'll have me, that's great. And if not, that's okay too. And I need to spend some time with my daughter. And I want to spend some time for myself. I've learned that that's my medicine. Mm-hmm. And so rather than cashing out my retirement at age 65, I will cash it out in 2 to 3 year increments for about 6 months to a year. And I had been informally doing that for over a decade.
Right. Those things that you considered failures, actually in hindsight,
were
in unconscious
seasons.
Redos. Yeah.
Entirely.
Yeah. Recharging.
And so I looked back at that and I said, oh, I really appreciate that. In between graduate school, in between college, in between this job and that job, I had these windows. And I think back to those are the happiest times of my life. Mm-hmm. And so this time last year, I had pretty much started my 6 months off.
Okay. You had already...
In June.
And you
June
didn't have 1st. This plan.
No. Oh, okay. No.
You just needed out for
a
while.
I had no plan.
Okay.
The plan was to maybe come back to Choice, which would have been a rewarding opportunity, and I would have been thrilled to do it.
Okay.
And, you know, here he is again. Can't hold down a job. Leaves at the high point of his career. No real game plan. You know, and I can only imagine what...
what the whispers are.
What the whispers
right?
are. I certainly know what the speculations yes. were that were said to me. But I was clear on, I'm taking 6 months and this is my plan. And towards the end of that time, I'd caught wind. A friend told me to just come visit Maple Grove Hot Springs. This is in September of last year. So I came with my girlfriend at the end of a small hunting trip with her family. And we came on a beautiful September. This place turns into fire. This maple turns red and yellow and orange at different stages. And it was amazing. And we were the only ones here. And the property was completely fallen apart and run down. And the bathroom ceiling was leaking. The main office roof was about to collapse. And the whole time I was sitting here, I was doing what I keep doing with properties is rambling, which probably everyone does, about what this place could be. Mm-hmm. And also how special it was. It took me minutes to feel like this was one of the most unique places. And we spent not even that long of an afternoon here, and I was fixated on it and talking to everyone about it and telling everyone to go visit it and also complaining how it was going to go the way of all these old properties, which is either continue to be run down into disrepair or get turned into a hyper-commercialized, you know, RV trailer camping place or something like that.
Or a boutique retreat.
You know, who knows? Yeah, or something, who knows what. And everyone with their idea. And a few weeks later, I heard it was closed. And
So it wasn't on the market when
no.
you came. Oh, so this was just a random, hey, check this place out.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
let's check it out.
Oh, okay.
And I came and checked it out and thought, awesome. Too bad, though. It's really falling apart. Man, this could be cool, though.
So it wasn't on the market, but you already had this sense of what you could do.
Yeah, I instantly contacted some family and some friends. And I started to mobilize some connections to the seller. And a mutual friend put me in touch with a few other individuals who had started the same. And we quickly got together and realized that I think we have enough shared interest.
And it'd be interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and so everything was really quick. So, and what we were able to put together was a like-minded group of four friends and family, and ultimately people who cared about the vision, the mission, the business. So it's actually a real moment that gets to the goal of this space. The goal of this space is to help individuals connect with themselves, with each other, through a small sense of community, really common to the old B&B type of space, and to the natural ecosystem that this place is housed in, and to do it in a way that finally creates a sustainable business model that can support this land outside of scarcity, that can renaturalize the space while inviting more people on it, that can get more people to soak in these waters.
Well, you don't want it to just become a selfie
spot. I just don't want it to become another cliche environment. I acknowledge, well, we're putting up canvas furnished units. That's pretty in vogue right now. And so then the idea is, well, how do I do those in a way that's authentic to us? Well, we design our own day beds and customize everything we build into it.
What was the building around the corner that's torn?
That was an old Prohibition era dance hall and drinking saloon.
Come on.
So I'm told.
Was that part of this property?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Back in the day, probably not. It's historically, that foundation has been here ever since. And in the spirit of collecting things that might have a use, I think every owner's left it thinking at some point they might build something on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to tear that down, clean that up, and set free the beautiful estuary that lies beneath it.
Was this the center of your vision? Was the yurt kind of the center point?
No, at the end of the day, the center point is always the bread and butter of the space, which is the hot springs.
Okay.
And one of the challenges around that is that building did not look like that. Mm-hmm. That building looked like a collapsed garage. And so, and that's what we had to work with. So,
and the pools, were they operational?
The pools were there.
Okay.
Everything had operational challenges. Pipes had gone unmaintained for a full season, which meant certain things weren't running, certain things were broken and leaking. And we had to repair a roof mid-February with no power. We still don't have power. I won't bore you with the challenges, but this is the hardest thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. It's also the most rewarding thing I've ever done. It's felt like the most balanced when I'm here and imbalanced at the same time, mm-hmm. because we don't have internet, we don't have power yet, which means all of the physical rebirth of this space is only half of the project. The other half is rebirthing the identity and business of Maple Grove, which is at the end of the day, a software solution.
Right,
and I'm
because
enjoying
you're
that
have
balance.
To, right, you're going to
so,
have to somehow reach it
right now,
to a bigger audience.
And we are. And so right now, what I'm learning is there's a beautiful balance in physical labor and also working in a coffee shop on a computer for a handful of days. And it makes me thrilled for both. Mm-hmm. And for me, who I'm probably an undiagnosed attention deficit type individual, it is the ideal work environment. I'm in a big city some of the times, and I am completely unplugged and present the rest of the time, interacting with people and solving water temperature issues and plunging out mineralized pipes and digging out rolled culverts that have collapsed.
And chatting with the guests.
And chatting with the guests.
Making sure that they're comfortable.
And rolling boulders and telling stories. It makes me really happy. But it has been a real challenge because right now there's not a marriage of those two worlds. They're a competing force for my time as a single parent still and as someone with a girlfriend.
I'm saying you still have your significant other.
I do. So what that means though is right now these 6 months have been, it feels like a marginally successful modern-day homesteader where every season unveils new problems and new challenges.
Because you're not even a year into it yet.
Oh, no. We've really been at it since April.
Right.
And observational since February. And so we've had to move fast to pull off the business. But it's working. And it's so fun to get guests up here. It makes it all worth it. So much of the work that we've done has been with volunteer crews. So my background at Choice Humanitarian was leading groups abroad. A part of that experience is integrating a very excited volunteer base into community-led development projects. Mm-hmm. And so we learned here that, you know, this is a working center. And we're seeing something really interesting that will inform how we operate forever, which is when guests come up here, and we plug them into projects we have, they leave as stakeholders, as friends, and we get so much more done. Mm-hmm. And they're having an experience that made their weekend re-energize them for whatever it is they have to go back to. If I'm experiencing this high volume of balance with physical labor and still working in a digital world at times, how many guests are also looking for a little introduction to that at a small level? And so once we are operable, we have a lot of other phases of development, which include trail maintenance, animal husbandry, production of food and growth. And our goal is to create a guest work trade program as well. So guests can optionally plug in to laid out volunteer projects for a few hours a day for discounts on the nights that they've just spent, so that people can have balance, mm-hmm. which is a little bit of work, a little bit of play, a little bit of connection, a little bit of privacy, a little bit of relaxation, and hopefully some celebration somewhere in there. People are just really excited to unplug. There's no connectivity here. Mm-hmm. And even when we have Wi-Fi, we will explicitly not offer that to guests unless there's a real pinch of a problem.
Which is what people are looking for.
And our product that we're offering is protection from that distraction. Mm-hmm. And we will be the stewards of that gate.
So if I come back here 3 years from now, given your kind of history, will you be here?
Yeah. My desire to really involve myself in this space as part owner and part short-term general manager is so that I have the ability to tackle projects when I really enjoy the startup phase of things. Mm-hmm. But I believe in being uncomfortable. And what's uncomfortable for me is the continued growth and management of something that I've started. And so I'm really here because it has all the right ingredients for me to be committed and balanced, and to also still come and go as I please. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to actually, for all the workers here, to create a program and some processes where this place is no longer a caretaker dependent space, meaning we have a team that's on site and everyone's rotating through as they need to, which keeps us all fresh and all re-energized and new ideas coming through. So my goal is to see us through this initial phase and then to see us through the phase after that.
Okay.
And the phase after that.
And so for you, it's like a series of startups on the same.
In the fall, I won't be here full-time. I think we'll hire a caretaking couple. Winter season will slow down a bit. We will still be operable. And I think I will continue to help run the business entity and to help make sure that our event side of things continues to grow. And so for me, this is home. I found my home.
Yeah.
I found a place that I'm like, I don't think I need to skip out on this. I think this has my built-in flexibility. Right now, I don't see it.
Okay.
I am fully
immersed. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'm sitting in Maple Grove Hot Springs in Thatcher, Idaho, with my guest, Jordan Menzel. So, Jordan, I found this property through Sunset Magazine. How does the Sunset Magazine relationship kind of work in your mind?
Well, it's an exciting one in the sense that we're building Maple Grove for ourselves, mm-hmm. the guests who've been coming here forever. And what I assume or hope are people out there who are looking for the experience that we're offering. I'm thrilled with any partner or outlet that wants to put that out there, because we're actually doing the homework and the work on our end to make sure that this place doesn't get overcrowded. And so for anyone starting a small business, any news is typically good news. What's great about how we even ended up in Sunset Magazine is one of our first retreats is with a company founded by my girlfriend, Janie Dial, called Wilder Goods. And so Wilder Goods was in the process of putting together their fall field trip. Meanwhile, Janie's boyfriend, me, is working on this project. And Maple Grove got snatched up and mentioned in mm-hmm. in that story about the Wilder Goods field trip. And in many ways has been an awesome platform for us to meet people like you.
It's interesting because it seems that your life has been a series of doors opening, and you having the confidence or even the trust to walk through those doors. And I think that's really something that's going to inspire other people. And one of the reasons I wanted to sit down and talk with you today. So thank you, Jordan Menzel, for spending time sharing your story, which is inspiring, and also your vision for Maple Grove Hot Springs. And I will be back, and we will revisit this and see where you are a year or so from now.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to get to know us.
Thank you. And this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest has been Jordan Menzel, General Manager and Partner in Maple Grove Hot Springs. And although we weren't taking calls in the studio today, I look forward to hearing your feedback about the show. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or you can send me a message through Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist, or through our Instagram, elizabeth_TRT. And if you missed any part of the show, you can always find this show and all of my previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. Or if you'd like, you can podcast my show by visiting A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist at Apple Podcasts or anywhere you find your podcasts. Hit subscribe, the show will be uploaded, and you can listen at your convenience. As always, I appreciate the opportunity to share these conversations with you. We'll be back again next Tuesday at 2. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Hey, my friend, it seems your eyes are troubled, care to share your time with me. Would you say you're feeling low and so a good idea would be to get it off your mind? Turns out not well, but what you think?